This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
All right, I had to shout out to Ethan in the other room. We don't have good line of communication here because Jennings just sent me this highlight reel that somebody had put together, and I put it up on the Twitter, so the ex-formerly Twitter, if you want to see. I know we have big Scott Jennings fans like my friend Jeannie Sullivan in the audience. He's a rock star now. So someone has compiled his greatest hits. In fact, our friend Gene Evans, who is often on the Reardon Roundtable, said, "Duck-billed platitude is probably my fave." He had some great lines. He has been really, really doing a great job. A lot of people are talking about Scott for potential job as the White House press secretary. I hope he doesn't do that from a variety of perspectives, but we'll see. Eric Schmidt has taken himself out of consideration for the Attorney General's post. So we did learn that today. A couple other administration positions with Tom Homan. Former New York Congressman Lee Zeldin is going to be at the EPA. There's a lot of things happening in Washington right now. I just ran into Matt Pauley from down the hall on the KMWX site. Matt's going to step in at 5:30 or so, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the Cardinals and Mizzou and the Chiefs. So we'll lighten things up here on Veterans Day. And along those lines, outside of politics, Christina Strait is with us in the studio with Strait Realty. We're not going to talk about that either. We're going to talk about something very interesting that she's doing. It's a new podcast. Everyone's got a podcast, Christina. How are you this afternoon?
Good. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Let me make sure I got the right mic up here because I get confused when other people aren't in the studio. Yeah, my favorite line is, as a terrestrial radio guy, I love promoting podcasts for everyone. But as we've learned here in the last couple of weeks, look, new media has kind of taken over. And people always say, you should have a podcast. Well, I kind of do have a podcast because the show is also podcasted. And our streaming numbers are actually pretty good, which encourages me because I just don't know how people even consume things. I'm a little confused these days. But how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
Beautiful Veterans Day here in St. Louis.
Gorgeous.
You texted me a couple of weeks ago, and Ryan Recker was filling in earlier this afternoon for Annie. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he mentioned this. I tried to get a message to him because Ryan actually helped you put this podcast together, right?
Yeah, for sure. I actually reached out to him and I said, hey, I'm thinking about this idea for a podcast. There's so many real estate podcasts out there. And I was thinking, well, why would anybody want to listen to mine? And I pitched my idea and he's like, I love it. Let's do it.
So this is different.
It's
I want you to explain what you're doing here. And this was intriguing to me for a couple of different reasons that I'll explain. But what did you want to do here?
Well, I wanted to do something different. I didn't want to talk about the boring stuff of real estate, which there are a lot topics that just bore people if you're not in the industry. I wanted to highlight some of my clients. I have over 3,000 clients and growing, and there are so many stories behind their sales, purchases and sales, that I just wanted to kind of talk about it, bring them in and tell it, have them explain it in their own words, what they were going through, and a vast variety of topics.
So it's not only, so the topic we're going to kind of focus in on here is about a client who bought a home that really kind of thinks that there's something going on with some spirits, right?
That's right.
You want to call them ghosts or whatever might be happening in the background. And one of the things that's interesting to me about that is I had a home in South City on Dover Place, not too far from where Sue lives in Holly Hills. And I had lived in that home for, I don't know, maybe 5 years, but I also rented it. I became a landlord for a while. That was a lot of fun. Actually, I had two good tenants, so I was good with it. But I sold that home 8 years ago when I moved into the house that I'm in right now because it helped with the down payment for the new house. But then I was told in the aftermath, and this was before I was here on 97.1, so it has to be more than 4 years ago because I talked about this on KMOX, that the people that bought my home insist that they think the upstairs is haunted, that they've heard things, they've seen things, and never happened to me whatsoever. But that kind of brings us to the story that you share with Donna here in the podcast. You want to explain that?
Yeah. So Donna, she had this beautiful house in Central West End. I'm not going to say the address, but she interviewed me.
Old house.
Yeah. But a turn of the century home. So built a long time ago. And she was explaining to me at the listing presentation that I was being not only interviewed by her, but also by her ghost. And she called her her ghost Gertie. And then there was another ghost that they called the butler Jack. And it kind of threw me off because I had never heard that before in a listening presentation. I didn't really know how to act.
So she kind of just like popped that on
you,
right?
She totally did.
That's
she totally did. And it made me a little worried because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, does this ghost know something about me that I don't know? Or how are they interviewing me? How do I make them like me? What if they don't like me? It's just all those emotions right at the same time.
So I might have a little clip here that I can play, but explain how Gertrude and the feeling of the spirits or whatever they want to call them exists in the house. And how does she feel that?
She said, so Donna said that she had always been attuned to the spirit world, and she knew right away when she walked into the house that there was something there, and she just kind of felt the presence of Gertie. I did not feel that. I didn't know that until, you know, she kind of told me, and then there was one time when I was in the alone by myself in the house that I thought, oh my gosh, what if I'm going to see her? What if I'm going to see Jack? And that kind of freaked me out. But other than that, I didn't really feel anything. But
she tells the story. Here's what Donna says.
Several things happened. So one of the first things that I noticed is that there would be shadows where there shouldn't be a shadow. And it was like a fleeting thing that would go across the floor or by the window. And at first I thought, you know, what is that? And then I just got this feeling that the person that I was calling Gert, that was her.
So I tend to be a person that believes that there is, even though we don't see it, there's an explanation for everything. Mm-hmm. Something goes missing in the home. Where did it go?
Right.
Oh, there is that explanation. We threw a blanket over it or something like that. But I'm also open to the idea because I've heard enough of these stories. This is something that's never really happened to me. I've never felt any presence like that. But I've had enough people share stories that I don't deny that some of this might exist out there.
Right. I'm totally with you. And I expressed in the podcast that as she's even telling me the story, I'm explaining it in my head. I'm explaining it away. Like, oh,
Exactly.
But to your point, there are some things that could be undeniable, and I'm open to it as well. I don't know if a spirit would ever talk to me. I'm not sure I'd be open to it, to even hear it. But clients say that they had
I think it's different people have, you know, whether they're in touch with that world or not. I've had conversations with people like that. And it's hard for me to just say, because I don't believe this, that, you're a kook or you're crazy. Because there are always something to it.
Sure.
And I don't know how to explain
absolutely.
It. I don't know if it's ghosts or something else, but there is something there.
Yeah, there absolutely could be. I'm not saying there's not, but I'm absolutely in your camp for sure.
So what else did Donna tell you, though, that in the podcast? And these are what your podcast on this one is like a half an hour, 35 minutes,
it's
something
about,
like that?
I'm trying to keep it around 30 minutes because people get bored.
User friendly, that's right.
Yeah.
You don't want to go three, 4 hours like Rogan? Come on.
well, maybe someday if there's demand. You know, I like to talk just like you, so that we could do that.
But
sure.
Donna's stories, though, did they get kind of, I didn't listen to the whole thing, did they get a little crazy, or does it leave more questions than answers?
Well, to me, it left more questions than answers. I had questions for her, like specifically, what about your private time? You know, what if you have an anniversary with your husband? Like, is the spirit always there? You know, or is it only confined to a certain portion of the home? And then I also said, did the spirit follow you to your next home? And her answer was no. But I have had clients, and I was telling you before on my next podcast, I'm going to be interviewing someone very similar who moved to Vegas. And he said that his spirit followed him from Wildwood to Vegas. And I don't know. Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. So are you doing this? Christina Strait is with us. You're doing it. What's the podcast called?
It's called The Strait Talk of Real Estate.
Okay.
With Christina
and are
Strait.
But are you kind of like, is this going to be a little bit of a niche here with the spirits and the ghosts, or is it not necessarily going to only be focused on that?
Not necessarily about that. It's going to be different stories. For instance, on Valentine's Day, I already have a couple who immigrated here from India legally, and they were a part of an arranged marriage. They met each other a week before they got married and then moved to St. Louis, and they have
really?
A very strong love story, and I love their story. So I'm going to bring them in and talk to them, and I help them sell
and buy a house. That's very different content there. I like that.
Yeah, just all different types of things. A chaplain for the Army, I'm going to talk to him. I would love to get you in some time to talk about your experiences with real estate.
Love to. I'll talk to anyone.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I just have lots of different clients with lots of different fascinating stories.
Yeah, everybody's got stories from you know, and a lot of times, certainly I would expect this to be the case with real estate, is you don't even realize what all the stories are until you get settled. I just explained it from this perspective. When I was looking for a house with the Gelmans 8 years ago, I never, you know, you pick the house and we were happy with the house. But then as time goes on, you're like, man, so glad I found this house, mm-hmm. not only because of the economy or anything else, but things kind of come together. And they, you guys always say you only need one buyer, right? There's always a buyer for every house, mm-hmm. but it magically sometimes kind of comes together, luckily, for some buyers.
It does. I've had buyers that have been looking for a long time and they get frustrated after a couple times of losing a house. And I say, you got to wait. It will happen when it's time to happen. And to your point about real estate with stories, real estate is one of those things that revolves around a major life event in someone's life, a divorce, a death, a marriage, a new child.
That's true.
You know, your children leaving for college, upsize, downsize, whatever. So those stories naturally are interesting to me because of what's happening in my clients' lives to make them want to buy and sell a house.
So you know that the Gelmans are my friends and sponsor too.
Yeah,
Christina, you're a sponsor,
well.
Right? You're a sponsor. Mm-hmm. But I'll ask you this question that I've talked to Mark about. So when I have a 9.5-year-old daughter right now, one of the things that he's told me is like, when my daughter's maybe old enough to buy a home, it's all going to be rentals. Is that the trend? Now, he's not saying that definitively, but certainly there's a pattern that exists here right now where homeownership is getting to be a bit of a challenge.
It is a challenge, very much so. Not only inventory, but interest rates and prices.
For sellers, this is going to be awesome, but do you see an area or a period where things will not be as difficult?
Well, it depends. I wouldn't say all the time it's awesome for sellers anymore. We're starting to
really?
See a little bit of a shift. We really
In what
are.
Way?
We're starting to see properties stay on the market a little longer because sellers are expecting multiple offers at a higher price point.
Oh, I see.
And buyers are a little bit gun shy and they kind of pull back. Well,
things are changing again, right?
They are changing. They are. But that's not necessarily going to change the fact that your daughter is going to have a problem buying or selling eventually a home.
You know, there's a part of me, and I said this for a long time, and I needed that money to put the down payment on the home I'm in right now. Mm-hmm. But man, there is a part of me that wishes that I would have held on to that home in the city
sure.
and then rented it to my kids, you know,
yeah.
because if they end up both living outside of St. Louis, but because then you start to think, well, how could they have an opportunity to even buy a home? Now, circumstances change and,
yeah.
you know, salaries change as well. I remember when I was 25, 26 years old, I didn't think I'd ever be able to own a home. Now, mainly, Christina, because I worked in radio and I made no money whatsoever. But honestly,
right.
I'm like, I there was a period in my life I'm like, it's just not going to happen.
Well, real estate is cyclical. Eventually, we'll come out of this. It's just not going to be as aggressively coming out of it as we have seen before.
Yep, we got to adapt. Tell folks where they can find the podcast.
Anywhere there are podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Podbean. You can go to my website, click on there, and see it as well.
Well, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Do you like? Can we talk about Vegas a little bit here?
Sure.
Or
not?
So you're doing real estate in Vegas.
I am.
Now.
I'm brokered in Vegas in Nevada,
and you know that's like my home away from home.
I know. I
right?
do. I think about you almost every time I go there.
I love Las Vegas so much, but you know this has been one of those years where I just haven't gotten out as much, unfortunately, just because of some complications with my life. But I love it because, and it's not just the gambling. Like, I don't even gamble that much anymore
at all.
But
either.
The food is spectacular.
There's
the
so
shows,
much to do.
The music. But here's one thing I would say about Vegas that I've told people because it's one of those places. I think a lot of people do this. You know, I've been to Louisville quite a bit. I'm like, you know what? I could live here. I like the vibe of Louisville mm-hmm. or you know, Nashville.
Yeah.
And I could say that I could live out west and I could live in Las Vegas, but it is getting so crowded out there. On everything's Manchester Road in Las Vegas.
Yes.
So you can get on the highways, and the highways are fine, the interstates, mm-hmm. but a lot of what you have to do is go on 3-4-lane roads, and there's lights, and the lights are like 5 minutes. The infrastructure is an issue out there, isn't
well,
it?
Well, it's even worse now because they're doing Formula One.
Oh, yeah, they're already starting for, that's coming up on Thanksgiving, right?
Right,
yeah.
On Las Vegas Boulevard. It is crazy. They're going to shut down half of it. And then they're building the NFL stadium. I mean,
Major League Baseball.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, for
baseball.
The A's.
Yeah.
Right. Allegiant is the NFL. But yeah, there's a lot going on. And
yeah,
I kind of forgot about F1 because that was such a big deal last year. It took them like 2 months to tear it down. And now it's taking them 2 months to build it up again. So 4 months out of the year, the strip is in a very, very strange
yeah.
place because of Formula One.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's still fun out there. Enjoy the time. Thank you for coming
Thank
in. Talking
you.
About some spooky things on the podcast.
Oh,
might have
yeah.
fit a little bit better before Halloween, but that's because the election was so crowded.
I get
so,
it. Thanks.
Good to see you. Thanks for coming
Always
in.
Always good to be here.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Matt Pauly's going to talk some sports coming up.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
We have audio cut of the day coming up. The whole team will be here tomorrow. Fred and Sue are off today. Ethan Hannaford is producing the show. He's going to pop in on us here because we have Matt Pauly from down the hall on the KMOX side, the Cardinals Radio Network. We have not chatted in a while. I figured this was a good opportunity. Matt, how are you?
I'm good.
Good to see you, dude. It's been a while since we've chatted anything sports, hasn't it? You know, one of the reasons is because you and I, at the beginning of the baseball season, were talking quite a bit about the Cardinals. And as I remember, it wasn't a great season. We didn't really, don't take it personally that we didn't invite you back a bunch. We just didn't talk much about Cardinals.
I know you hate me. It's okay. You can admit
it. I just couldn't bring myself to talk about the Cardinals. And it was painful because I really love baseball and I depend on baseball for entertainment. And let me just start there. And Ethan, you can jump in as well because, you know, you have thoughts about the Cardinals as well. Let's start with baseball. And I do want to cover Mizzou and the Blues and a couple other things here. But is there, what kind of hope could you paint for a Cardinals fan right now for next season?
For next season?
That's tough, isn't it?
Yeah, it is tough because the payroll's coming down. I will say this. When John Mozeliak spoke at the GM meetings last week, and I wasn't there, so all I could do is read the quotes, I thought his tone was a little bit different. And they signed their new TV deal, and it's a 23% cut in revenue for TV. That sounds like a lot compared to what else is going on in baseball and the other Bally markets that are not getting actual TV deals and are going with their in-house produced stuff. Cardinals are in a pretty good spot. Just the 23% pay cut is probably about as good as it could be. And gambling, just barely passing.
Barely.
Yeah. So one revenue stream is cut not quite as much as it could have been, and another revenue stream is being created.
So that helps.
Yeah. I listened to John Mozeliak, and reading those quotes, I thought his tone was just a little bit different. Obviously, payroll's going down. I think one more big contract gets moved, likely Nolan Arenado. But the doom and gloom, everybody's getting traded, it's going to be a double-A team. I don't think that's going to be the case for next year. And I think if you squint a little bit, you can see them being as good as they were this year, which stinks when they're going for it. But when they're in the middle of kind of a reset with the idea in years moving forward, they're going to be able to compete at a higher level. Honestly, if they're in playoff contention and maybe sneak into the playoffs next year with no real shot of going on a playoff run, I think that'd be a nice season next season.
But what do we know at this point? We know that Paul Goldschmidt has declared for free agency, right?
Yeah, and they're not talking to him.
Yeah, right. So he's going to move on, unfortunately. Yep. And it's disappointing because we loved him. He's been a great, you know, Cardinal, and we couldn't bring home a championship for him or Arenado. We know that Wilson Contreras is going to move to first base, right?
Yep.
Thoughts on that?
I like it because it keeps his bat in the lineup, potentially, if it works. The idea is he's going to have the potential to be healthier more of the season. He has missed so much time, especially this past season. And with all due respect to his defensive catching, which was perfectly fine. People are used to Yadier Molina. It wasn't Yadi, but what he did defensively as a catcher this past season was fine. But he's not here for his defense as a catcher. He's here for his bat. And when you look at his numbers, he's a top five, top six offensive first baseman. There seems to be this feeling that, his offense at catcher is great, but if you move him to first base, it's not good anymore. That is not correct. His offense stands up quite well. I mean, once you get past the Freddie Freemans and, you know, the other top tier, maybe future Hall of Fame type first baseman, Contreras is right there.
So my reaction when I first heard about this as just, an uneducated sports fan, Scotty Warren was on last week, and I kind of liked it. And then he threw all kinds of cold water on it. But from the defensive perspective, because, and I think his points were well taken. This is a position where we might, especially after looking at Goldschmidt for these past years, he makes it look easy.
Yeah, Contreras will not be as good of a defensive first baseman as Goldschmidt was. There may not be a better active defensive first baseman than Paul Goldschmidt right now. He's one of the best. But Contreras is going to work really hard. He's athletic enough to block balls behind the plate. He's going to know what it takes. He put so much work in. You think of who he was defensively as a catcher in Chicago and what he became in St. Louis. He did that with work, and bluntly, he did that with work where he didn't have a lot of help from the Cardinals because they don't have a catching instructor and things like that. The infrastructure that they need wasn't there. So
interesting.
He was doing most of that just on his own. So again, when you put it up against Paul Goldschmidt, yeah, the defense is going to take a step back, but he's not going to be a bad defensive first baseman.
So who is then the starting catcher, or is it truly a competition between Pius and Herrera?
Yeah, I think it's going to be that. If you base it off the playing time from this past year, it certainly seemed like the team was more comfortable with Pedro Pius. If you base it off offensive potential, Ivan Herrera's bat can be a middle-of-the-order bat. So that's going to be one of the big questions for the Cardinals in spring training. Do they go with the guy who's better defensively in Pius, or do they go with the guy who can be a real plus bat in the lineup?
I like the bat in the lineup.
We switched to the battery. Talking about the battery here, switching to the pitching side of things, you know, we know that Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson likely aren't returning with the player options not being, or the club options not being taken. What are your thoughts on what the starting rotation is going to look like next year? We know that Sonny Gray wants to stay, but then you got some ugly contracts right now with Michaelis and Matz, but they want to go younger. It seems kind of backwards trying to build forward with a young squad.
Right now, if you look at the rotation, it goes Gray, Fetty, Pallante, Michaelis, maybe Matz, maybe McGreevy. I don't even know if there's room for a Graceffo. Eventually, Quinn Matthews is going to get there. I feel like there's got to be another spot or two opened up for some young guys. I want to see Gordon Graceffo get that chance. I want to see Quinn Matthews when he's ready for there to be a door for him to walk through. So I actually wouldn't be shocked if this team maybe trades Eric Fetty. There seems to be some speculation out there that he could really be a valuable piece for teams that maybe come up short in terms of trying to acquire starting pitching via free agency. So if they moved on from him, maybe that opens up something. I'd love to see the team get out from underneath the contracts of Steven Matz and Miles Michaelis. I think it's a little bit easier with Matz than Michaelis. You have to, if you move on from Michaelis, you have to pay a ton of his salary. And he's got a no trade. He's very comfortable in St. Louis. He gets to sleep in his own bed when he's at spring training. Like, there's a lot of things going against being able to trade Miles Michaelis.
So what about, you mentioned Arenado before. I mean, I think right now it looks like he has to approve of the trade, but there might be trade possibilities that might come up over the winter, right?
Yeah, I think there's a few spots that you can see how it would work. He would work probably pretty well in Houston. They could use somebody over at third base. There's been some rumble. I don't think he would love to go east unless it's an obvious World Series championship type situation. So people mentioned Boston. I don't see that so much. People mentioned Philadelphia, maybe, because Philadelphia is a really good team. Obviously, he would love to go to L.A. and be with the Dodgers, but they got Max Muncy over there, and they would have to move some things around. Not that they can't, but they would have to move some things around for him. I think he likely gets moved. I would caution Cardinals fans on this because he still had, even with the Rockies picking up some of his salary this upcoming season, there's still a hefty amount of money connected to Arenado's contract. Don't think that if the Cardinals trade Nolan Arenado that there's going to be this heavy influx of prospects coming back for him. This would be more of a salary dump than anything else.
So then that would maybe raise it, what would be wrong with keeping him?
They want to go young. They want to give guys an opportunity.
Couldn't you have gotten more from him at the trade deadline over the summer, though?
Maybe, but they were in a different spot then.
Okay.
His value was kind also of so low because of how poorly he was playing.
Well, that's
too
true. I mean,
yeah.
You're hoping that he improves and that maybe that increases a little bit.
But if you are going to be John Mozeliak and company and talk about, we're going to open up opportunities for younger players, well, then you got to open up opportunities for younger players. And when Wilson Contreras becomes your first baseman, that closes off an opportunity because that could have been Alec Burleson and Lucan Baker. So right now you're looking at second and third. J.J. Weatherholt's going to be your second baseman at some point probably in the next 12 months. So that opens up third, and you've got Nolan Gorman, Brendan Donovan, Thomas Sejesi. I'm probably missing guys off the top of my head. You got to open up a situation somewhere.
So how Matt and I both spent a fair amount of time in Milwaukee. I was there a long time ago. You were there more recently. But how did they do it?
they invest in infrastructure, they invest in technology, and they invest in people. And when I'm talking about people, I'm not talking about players. I'm talking about support staff. You know, the Katie Wu of The Athletic had an article.
I talked about it a lot. That really was eye-opening, because it talked about all the support people that other teams have that we don't have.
Yeah, so I was, you know, I worked in minor league baseball for a really long time, and I worked in the Royals organization, the Rockies organization, the Brewers organization, and almost always there'd be some sort of roving instructor that was flying in and planting their flag with the team for a little while. And that just, there aren't enough guys in the Cardinals organization roving around. When Jordan Walker got sent back to AAA this past year, the Cardinals should have had a roving outfield instructor that they could have sent to Memphis and just had there to work with him defensively. When he was up in the big leagues working with Willie McGee every day, he was getting so much better defensively. That all went away when he went down to Memphis. The Cardinals have to have people that they can go send to places throughout the minor leagues to help guys get better.
So what happens to that guy? Like Jordan Walker and a couple of the other names that we were expecting to be potential superstars. Now, we can't pass over Mason Winn because, holy moly, that guy, he's doing his job, right? And he's going to be here for a while. But what about Jordan Walker? And I'm forgetting another name.
Nolan Gorman's probably the other guy that you put in there. Look, there's a lot of pressure on this organization to have people in place to help unlock these guys. Brant Brown's the new hitting coach. He comes in with a pretty solid pedigree on working with guys. There's going to be other hires. There's going to be other infrastructure that's put in. But the number one goal, I think, for the Cardinals is to get Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman back on the right path. And if they are,
man, I hope that's possible.
Everything else kind of fits in.
Right. If they are, that provides you with a lot of flexibility. But if they're not, then you almost are taking a step back.
Yeah. Offensively, you have Contreras at first. If Walker and Gorman take a step forward, that more than makes up with whatever you're losing in Arenado and Goldschmidt.
Let's talk a little bit other sports. We touched on this with Frank and the Blues, but that was not a good weekend for the Blues, right?
Just terrible. And I want the Blues to be good so badly. Like, that's the team that I can just sit there and be a fan of. I don't really, I talk about them, but I'm not at games covering them and things like that very often. I just want them to be good. And this, I hate saying this, but to me, the core of this team are the guys that last year got a really good coach fired, and now they're just doing the same old you-know-what over again.
That's what it seems like.
Yeah.
How much do you have to take into consideration the loss of two of your big-name guys in Robert Thomas, Philip Broberg? I mean, the reason that I was so optimistic going into the season is because of the offer sheet additions that they made, and Broberg was so much promised to start off the year. How much does that, not only obviously on ice, but also off the ice, just take it out of a team when your two immediate guys are gone like that?
Yeah, I wish you were asking me that question 3 weeks from now, because generally in sports, when you lose a key player or you lose key players, everybody else comes together for kind of a short amount of time and they all lift their games and they play well, and you get kind of caught in this whole, you know, there's this fool's gold of, oh, maybe they're going to be okay, and then that dissipates and eventually you kind of regress back to the mean. That didn't happen with the Blues. We didn't see any of that. These guys get injured and we did not see everybody kind of coming together. So I understand what you're saying, Ethan, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying it's startling to me that after a major injury, we didn't see a bunch of guys find a different gear, even if it was just temporary.
What is your thought right now on the college football landscape? I've lost a little bit of track of Illinois because they had such a great season. What about Indiana? My gosh, unbelievable story there. Mizzou survives one over the weekend. That was incredible. I just talked to Frank about Brady. I don't know if he's going to play against South Carolina. Mizzou has a couple of different paths. They could lose the next three games. They could win the next three games. Who knows what's going to happen?
Has there ever been a 7-2 team from the SEC that you have felt more poorly about?
No. Like, no. Isn't that weird, though?
Yeah, it's crazy because the two really legit teams they've played with, they just got run off the field. With no disrespect meant to Vanderbilt and BC, the other kind of two okay teams that they've matched up against. But the two really good teams just took care of them without a problem. Look, give credit. They found a way to win. It was that first half was ugly.
Three quarters of the game was about the most boring game I've ever seen.
It was about three and a half minutes at the end.
Yeah, that was it.
And then they score those and they get the scoop. And I mean, it was...
that was exciting. Yeah. And then you got the Chiefs game from yesterday. I mean, they just get so lucky, right? The other teams that hate, you know, the fans of the teams that hate the Chiefs just have to be saying, man, what can we do differently, right?
Roger Goodell has a voodoo doll with whatever team that they're playing against. And yeah, I mean, a walk-off blocked kick.
Oh,
when
my.
Does that happen?
I know.
When
I mean,
does that happen?
I sat there, surprisingly, I was about to turn it off. I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch it. Maybe he'll shank it. It's a chip shot. And then they block it, which was just glorious. The other thing, I talked to Frank about this game tonight. Look, I think the LA Rams are going to be in contention here for the playoffs in a few weeks because they're getting healthier.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to be... I'm not a Rams fan. Don't get me wrong here. I was never a fan when they were here in St. Louis. But I think they're rounding into form right now because they're healthy.
You're probably right, but I hate them.
I know.
So.
A lot of people do. But I'm an NFL fan, Matt Pauly. What can I say?
You could see the hatred in his eyes.
Oh, I just hate them so much.
It.
Yeah. My favorite team every week is the team that the Rams are playing.
And I'm fine with that. In fact, tonight, I would like Nacua to either get thrown out of the game. I don't want him to get injured. That's not a nice thing to say. But I'm facing him in fantasy football. And if he has a big game, I likely lose my game. So
it's
all about my fantasy football team.
That's all that matters.
Matt, what can I say?
What's your fantasy football team's name?
I used to ride a bike with a bunch of folks. Like some of them were really good road racers, and we had these jerseys that were created years ago that were invented to create confusion among other cyclists. And we had like very stealth jerseys that were called Special Ops. Mm-hmm. So people would see us and like, oh man, what's that? Big Shark Special Ops. So my team is called Special Ops because of that jersey from many years ago. And I know there's a long explanation of why I call it that, but that's the name of it.
Okay, that's good.
But people come up with, see, my name's not very creative. People come up with really creative names in fantasy football.
We're fans of the Mass Singer in the Pauly household. So mine is the Mass Kicker.
Oh,
yes.
Ethan, what's your team name?
Team Hanny. All of them.
Oh,
team
Hanny. Yeah, mine is just consistent with Special Ops. Now, since we brought up fantasy and Sue's not here, she'd be rolling her eyes. Most of the audience will be. So I have three leagues that I'm in, right? In the league that I got an A-plus in my draft, I suck completely.
Yeah.
In the league that I got a D in my draft, I suck completely. In the draft where I had a C-minus, I'm actually been doing really well, but I need to win tonight. So it's just so funny.
The algorithm doesn't know how good you're going to be at the beginning of the season.
And it's just, sometimes it's just ridiculous. Look, I've had, you know who's been killing it for me? Saquon, except not yesterday.
Yeah.
And Jalen had all the, and I have him in another league, but I needed Barkley to step up. So, but fantasy football's fun. I just would like to maybe finish in the money one of these years for sure. Matt, it's great to see you. How's the family?
They're good. I got the 5-month-old has not been sleeping a lot lately, so I haven't been sleeping a lot lately.
Oh, kind of went into the other direction?
Yeah, did the sleep progression thing, which
that
was
happens.
Not fun. Yeah.
Right.
5-hour energy going, baby.
I have a new grandson down
in
Houston
yeah.
who will be here in just a few weeks for Thanksgiving. He is, oh man, he's like 10 weeks old now, I think, which is hard to believe.
How many times have you seen him? Just the one time?
Just once. Okay. Unfortunately, I went down there for the weekend a few weekends ago, and then they're coming in for Thanksgiving. It's just, it's not an easy place to get to with your car because it's a pretty long drive, and then throwing airfare together in short notice with three people is tough as well, but it was great. Yeah, we're looking forward to Thanksgiving for sure. But Matt, thanks for coming in. We always love talking a little sports here and fantasy football with Ethan here as well. You know, he's the voice of the Lindenwood football team.
They had
a big win over the weekend, too, over SEMO.
Yeah.
How about that?
Not too
Matthew,
bad.
We'll see you soon.
All right.
Take care. Audio cut of the day coming up. Wow. I decided earlier this afternoon, you know, Fred and Sue aren't here, and a lot of people are off because of the holiday. I do have some stories that I want to share from the weekend with interactions with some folks on the election. I'm going to save that for tomorrow. We'll probably do it at 3:00 in the monologue. But I do want to kind of update people on a few things here. And this was a story, if you go back to Friday in my audio cut of the day, I featured some audio that I'm going to replay here because I have a little bit more to add to the list. So this is let's see if I can figure out before I totally launch into this here. Let me see if I can figure out exactly where this was. I think this might have been California, but I'm not sure. It really doesn't matter. This is an 82-year-old woman who I'm going to play her version of the story first, and then we'll tell you what happened. So she claims that she kind of admits that she was starting some of this with a Trump supporter who had brown skin, a Hispanic. I'm sorry, Latinx. Oh, forgive me for those of you who were triggered. You don't think that has something to do with Hispanic people voting for Republicans, that you're calling them Latinx or Latinx? I think it does. So this woman, and this is all on a body camera from a police officer, got into it with a Trump supporter because she didn't like the fact that the Trump supporter was brown. And the Trump supporter having brown skin was racist. And she doesn't like racism. You think I'm making this up? Check it out.
I want to know why you're voting for Trump. That's the only reason I want to know. And I said, because you're brown skin.
And I know that that's what's going to happen to people in this country. I hate the racism in this country. I hate how people are treated. Okay? And so I'm wondering, why would somebody with brown skin support this man?
So you can kind of hear it. The audio's a little hard to hear. She's saying, I hate the racism. I hate because she is the white arbiter of what racism is and what racism shouldn't be. So how can someone of brown skin, how could they support Donald Trump? I'm outraged by this. So she interacts with this woman.
And that was my question. And she immediately started screaming racism. She came in with her face right up to me, just screaming at the top of her voice. And my response was to push her away, and I put my hand to her chin, and I pushed on her shoulder.
All right, so that's why the cop got there, and I'll kind of play the other person's version of the story here in a second, but she went on because the cop's asking questions.
Everyone has their point of view.
But listen, so, I don't go with that any longer. When we have Nazis and racism becoming the predominant thing, turning people against each other, that to me is criminal. We are really endangered right now. And I don't understand why people don't understand that.
If that's your stance, how does it look that you're placing hands onto someone else with different views? It doesn't support your...
It's anger.
Okay. Thank you. It's anger. She's angry. She's angry that Trump won. She's angry that anyone could have any thoughts that are opposite of hers. So this is the woman who was attacked.
So she came up to me and she read my shirt and she said, you know that God doesn't like guns. And I said, well, you know, I'm not voting for Trump to be my...
I'm going to qualify this because she was wearing a shirt that referred to God and guns, and that's why she said that. So I apologize. Let's start that again.
So she came up to me and she read my shirt and she said, you know that God doesn't like guns. And I said, well, you know, I'm not voting for Trump to be my pastor. And then she says, and you should know better.
Get up in your face?
Oh, yeah.
She
was right there. Okay. And then she said, you should know better. I said, why? Because I'm my skin color? I said, you're a racist. And then she came up and she pushed me.
Okay.
And then she hit me in my freaking chin.
Like close fist.
I mean, she obviously didn't hurt me, but it's like, you know what? You have the freedom of speech. You can say whatever you want. You can't touch me.
Do you want to press charges?
Absolutely. Yeah, because she cannot... That makes me nervous.
No, I agree. You can't do that.
Yeah, so she's pressing charges, and they're actually... this hate crime thing is just a bunch of crap. It's always been a bunch of crap. I hate the whole notion of a hate crime. But you know what? The left loves it, right? They love the hate crime enhancer. So let's slap a hate crime enhancer on to this 82-year-old woman and teach her a lesson, because it's revolting what's happening out there. Now, for the actual audio cut of the day, I'll do this here because I think that you have a situation, and we'll get into this a little bit more tomorrow. Boy, the legacy media, just when they've been taught a very, very hard lesson by 70 million Americans, they still don't get it.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, so here is a PBS reporter. We should absolutely, one of the first things that Trump should do is pull the funding from NPR and PBS. I have high hopes that it's going to happen. Maybe because they didn't get it, right? Like this.
One thing that I think stands out also, we can't have this conversation, a little bit to your point, Dana, is that maybe it's not so much Democrats' policies or messaging or the words that they use specifically, but there is an entire right-wing media ecosystem.
Yes.
It doesn't exist on the left.
Yes.
It does not exist in the center or mainstream. And people are getting their information in very different ways now.
Okay, all of a sudden they're going to point to a different ecosystem that is on the right. Give me a break. But this is what they're doing. Oh, yes, we were overpowered. We didn't see this coming from the Joe Rogans and the new media. By the way, everybody that is in new media started their new media because the legacy media sucks so badly that they had to do something, like Barry Weiss at the New York Times. She left because they were reckless, irresponsible, embarrassing, and they weren't actually doing journalism. They were living on an agenda, which is exactly what PBS and NPR does, right? She goes on with her crap.
Donald Trump and Republicans and Elon Musk and Joe Rogan know exactly how to reach Americans where they are, regardless of age and demographic. And that played a big role in this.
How about you as CNN or PBS? How about you go throughout America? I've talked about this idea for years. Put a bureau in, Branson, Missouri, or Tulsa, Oklahoma, or Little Rock, Arkansas. Talk to real Americans that aren't full of hate and bigotry. They just want to afford their grocery bills. They won't do that. Here's Willie Geist out of Touch NBC.
Jim VandeHei, I want to go back to something Derek Johnson, the head of the NAACP, said a few minutes ago on this show, because you've always been sort of the leading edge of where media is going with Politico, now with Axios. You understand the environment so well. How do Democrats, and frankly, how does legacy media need to change the way it thinks about getting information? I mean, a lot of the voters who went out and voted for Donald Trump, that so many people are wondering what happened here, they're not watching, frankly, this show. They're not reading the New York Times. They're not consuming media that way. And the Trump campaign found those voters where they live. So how do Democrats need to change the way they communicate to voters, if you think that's part of the problem?
For sure. I mean, I think all of us have to come to grips with legacy media is just not as important as it thinks it is.
Well, one of the reasons for that is that you've lost the trust of the American people. I think they're still consuming your BS. They just don't believe it. They don't buy it, which is part of the problem. Here's another CNN person.
Because they think the Democrats are just repeating like a rigid ideology that they haven't thought through. They see the left, which they would consider CNN a part of. Of course, we don't see it that way, mm-hmm. right? But as having this rigid repetition of ideology that they haven't thought through.
I love the fact that she says, see, that was somebody who worked on CNN. She goes, well, they see it as left. Well, yeah, we see it as left because the only person that's on there outside of someone that has an agenda for the left is Scott Jennings. That's all you got. You got one guy on there that's been the token Republican, kicking their asses, by the way, on CNN and taking names later. And by the way, I mentioned that somebody put a highlight reel together of Jennings. I just put it up on the Twitter. All right, here's one more. I think this one was on MSNBC.
Particularly the media ecosystem, it's not a good one. It's a negative one. It's a radicalization funnel. But what they have done in their online media ecosystem uh-huh. is build a radicalization engine.
Oh, my God. This is another one of my favorites. Do you think that defund the police and all this other nonsense, lighting American cities on fire with gaslighting from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the New York Times, the Washington Post, you don't think that what they've done to themselves? Talk about the indoctrination. The indoctrination is clear on the papers or the pages of American newspapers every single day. It's agenda journalism. They have lost the faith in the Fourth Estate. Part of this is a rejection, a complete and utter total rejection of the Fourth Estate. And they don't even get it. They don't understand it whatsoever, which is kind of awesome. Here's Bill Maher.
Just made me think. I'm sure every single member of the Saturday Night Live cast was a Harris supporter. But what if one of them wasn't? What if one of those cast members was for Trump? Would they have felt comfortable saying so? I really don't think so. They would have had to keep it to themselves. That's not a good place for us to be.
And it's not a good place for us to be, but that is exactly the place we're in. And we get back here tomorrow with Sue and Fred and the whole gang. I have a bunch of screen captures from some messages, some Facebook posts, and some other things that have happened in a group of friends that I think is very, very revealing about what people on the left feel right now. Look, I'll just be honest with you. There were people that were flat out suggesting, I've seen this on Twitter too, that maybe folks on the left should signal to one another that they're on the same team and that they're not xenophobic and misogynistic and bigoted and all these other words, right? They should wear blue wristbands to show everyone who they are and to show it as a warning for those of us who voted for the winner and are about to make this country change again. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Have a great Monday night.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.